JT, live in Vegas.
Football season is finally here.
Number one, I love football.
Oh, yeah.
And I love the Raiders.
We go balls out with the Raiders.
Just win, baby.
My father used to say that the greatness of the Raiders is in its future.
I'm all in.
We go balls out with the Raiders.
Dominate, commitment to excellence.
There is unfinished business.
The best and most elite Raiders insiders right here exclusively on this show.
Oh, yeah.
Just win, baby.
Here I am, and I'm ready to get to work.
And now, live from Las Vegas, here's JT the Brick.
Great to have you, JT, today. Brought to you by Golden Entertainment, the home of the SG, where I had a great chicken sandwich today. Maybe the best in the valley. The SG, 215 and Flamingo. Sierra Gold, all the PTs, and where you should go for your fantasy football draft coming up here. It's chaos all week. It's fantasy football drafts. We have you set up with the draft kits, all the drink and food specials at every PT's, setting up for fantasy football as you put your draft together this week. And a big week for us, football, as we're one step closer to the Raiders' Monday night home opener against the Rams. A couple of Mondays from now, I'm up in Seattle this week. It's a short week for me. Head up with the Silver and Black to the 206 Wednesday, Thursday, come back Friday as the Raiders are wrapping up the preseason, which I think has been a pretty good preseason so far when it comes to lack of, you know, injuries. There's no real injuries to talk about. John Gruden jumped in with a brand new system. Everything got taken down. Defense completely gutted. Paul Gunther comes in, a completely different scheme that they hope works. And then Gruden, his entire lifelong playbook, reinstituted in the NFL with a primetime quarterback in Derek Carr. It's the marriage of Carr and Gruden. And they had the OTAs. They stayed up late and hung out and had meetings around the clock since he took the job. Gruden has Carr ready. With a short preseason, not a lot of reps. I don't know if I'm a big fan of that, but Carr's completely healthy, healed, and now with Gruden going forward, coming into Vegas, this has got to be a big year for Carr. It's got to be a big year if he's going to help Gruden win in the first and second year. Carr has to be magnificent right out of the gate this year. Other NFL news I just want to touch on quickly here, and we'll bounce back and forth, is Odell Beckham Jr. got the largest contract in the history of the NFL at the wide receiver position. I believe when it comes to guaranteed money, which is the key in these contracts, he deserves it. Remember, he's never played in a big, big game that mattered. Super Bowl, NFC Championship game, iconic moment. Hasn't had that, but he's a great regular season player. He is dominant early in his career. He can make every play. He's fast. He's got all the moves. He's a precise route runner. Question is, now the Giants are married to Odell Beckham Jr. for the next 5 years. If I said to you today, which I am, do you think that you'll see Odell Beckham Jr. completely out of the tabloids and not in trouble over 5 years? If you had a bet on it today down at the Red Rock, what would you do? Depending on the odds, I don't know if he's going to be great in New York with all the pressures of New York, but now this contract assures that he has to win at least a Super Bowl, at least one to pay for this contract, because it's $65 million guaranteed. And the deal eclipses Antonio Brown, $17 million per year, and Mike Evans, his $55 million in total guarantees. This is something great for you to talk about if you play fantasy. If you love the NFL the way I do, do you believe that this guy should be paid this much money? Considering his short resume, do you buy in to what he's done? 876-1340. The Beckham contract is the lead story in the NFL, the biggest sport in our country, after he knocks this deal down. What a surprise today. Bobby Machado, who produces the show, and I are talking about the guests we wanted to have on today. So we booked Kevin Ioli on Sunday because Kevin Ioli, the great boxing insider, wrote an unbelievable column on John McCain and his passion to boxing. It's really good. We'll tweet it out again. Kevin's going to come on to talk about that. Joe Lisi is our college football insider. He picked outright, while he was in town, Hawaii. Hawaii straight up, and he nailed it. And everybody's talking about him in the industry as he's right out of the gate, out on the limb with a real opinion, and he nailed a big, big bet starting it off. We'll talk to him coming up. And then Lee Sterling from Paramount Sports is going to join us every few weeks on Friday nights with picks that are free. You don't have to pay for them. I go, hey, you available tonight? He goes, yeah. He goes, I got the winner, UNLV, USC. I'll give it to your listeners for free. I have it. He's on the right side of it. Lee Sterling coming up here in about 40 minutes. So I'm putting the show together with Bobby, and my phone rings. And it's Evan Rosenblum from TMZ, the producer, with Harvey Levin. He goes, hey, I just want to let you know that the president of the United States right now tweeted your interview with Jim Brown. He just put it out on Twitter. And it's from the content of your show. We're going big with it. I said, what? He goes, yeah. He goes, today, after John McCain passes, the stock market all-time highs, everything that's going on in the Michael Cohen investigation, fake news in Russia, Trump picked this radio show and Jim Brown's comments to me and tweeted directly at Jim Brown. Here's what Jim Brown said with us last week. Jim Brown joins us. Jim, you've known and you've sat down with many presidents over your life. When this current president gets political with the game that you played at the highest level, the NFL, and comments on this, are you able to comment? Do you sit back and watch this? Are you concerned of the message coming from the White House?
Well, I tell you, man, it's very confusing, JT. It's hard to know the good guys and the bad guys. I should be criticizing Trump on every level because he does certain things that calls for criticism. But when I look at television and I see all of these announcers become experts and they're pointing their fingers and they're not doing a doggone thing but pointing their fingers, I find myself really pulling for the president. Now, that will make me very unpopular in the black community, very unpopular with a lot of Americans. But I think that there are certain good things that are coming out of this presidency because we've never seen anything like it. I mean, there's confusion. A lot of people are retiring. A lot of people are giving their opinions. And we have to really dig deep down inside to come up with the right kind of an answer. But here's my answer to all who wants to criticize me or who don't believe that I'm a good American. I believe that I have to work on myself first to be as good a person as I can be, to back up my country in the best way I know how. And the second situation, I should be helpful to those people who need help that don't have life as good as I have it. And if I do those two things, then I think I'm making my contribution.
So that's Jim Brown on Fox Sports Radio with us last week. This morning, the president tweeted, thank you to the great Jim Brown, perhaps the greatest running back of all time, for your wonderful words and support. Since our meeting in New York, African-American unemployment has reached the lowest level in history. You get it. So he was only tweeting that directly because he heard what he said on this show, which he deemed were kind words from the great Jim Brown. And on this day where there was a lot going on, he spent time tweeting about this show. Bobby, we're not making that up. Are we exaggerating? Probably a little bit, but we can back it up in court. This day, the president tweeted about this radio show and a guest that we had on last week. I thought that was interesting and kind of cool in a way, but we don't dive into the politics the way some other shows want to dive in. But this came back at us in a tidal wave just a few short hours ago at TMZ. Want to get back to the Raiders and what I saw in the Green Bay game that happened on Friday night. And not that big of a surprise for me until I found the day before we heard that Green Bay wasn't sending their offensive line to the game. So again, I use these radio shows to go on and say that's disgraceful. Said it. Knowing I was going up there, who are going to be Packer fans, how could you not travel with a portion of your team, especially your offensive line? You don't have to play Aaron Rodgers. I get it. You don't have to play him. But you got to travel with your offensive line. You can't leave players at home. And Green Bay snubbed everyone and did that. To the fans in the upper deck in Oakland who paid a full ticket, paid to park, paid concessions, to NFL Network who aired the shows, to two local broadcasts, the one I work on up in Oakland and the Green Bay broadcast, I thought that they crossed the line. I thought it was a slap in the face to the shield and the brand to do it. And I love Mike McCarthy. Only have good things to say about Aaron Rodgers. I just thought it was a bad look. So right after that was announced, John Gruden, who had a certain amount of plays he wanted to play, you got to scrap it. Because how are you going to play your starters if they're not even bringing their starters? God forbid you get an injury, the ones against the twos. So John Gruden pared everything back a bit. Carr opened up the game and threw a bomb to Amari Cooper, and it was mostly Amari going up and getting a ball he could get. That was a cool play. And there were a couple of interesting things I saw, which I'll get into all week with our guest. But for the Raiders, they are now running a football game. The X's and O's of a game. And it's very quiet. Everybody knows their roles. Everybody's covering. There's a heavy push from the young defensive tackles. The offense seems healthy and loaded on the offensive side of the ball. And not to say anything bad about former coaches, but these coaches are looking around. It's their guys. They brought in a whole new team, and they seem to have it quiet and everybody on the same page. I applaud John Gruden for that. John Gruden has stabilized the 6-win team and brought in completely new players to try to win games starting 2 Mondays from now. That's impressive because with what the Raiders just had and what they had last year, if the same players came back, they would be a 6-7 win team again. They just would not play at a higher level of their 6 or 7 wins, in my opinion. Gruden's going to give them a fair chance to do that. We'll see what happens. He's furious with the penalties, though. Come on, Raider Nation, clean it up. You can't have this many penalties in the preseason because the Raiders always have penalties, and Gruden knows it.
Happy to win. It's fun to win no matter what the stake of the game is, but proud of our players. Obviously, a lot of penalties, excruciating amount of penalties.
I interviewed him at halftime as he came out of the tunnel on TV, and John Gruden, I asked him a question about defense. I get one question with him, and he went into penalties. He's not making this up, Chucky. This is who he is. He doesn't like penalties. He doesn't like to go backwards. He doesn't want mistakes. And they got a ton of penalties in the preseason. You're going to clean that up week one? You better hope you do. Plus, they're instituting new rules, helmet-to-helmet contact and all that, so there's going to be more penalties this year, I believe, going in than in years past. Fortunately for Gruden, Carr is really clicking. He hasn't played at all, just a little bit in the preseason, but in all the practices and the lead up to these games, he looks real good.
Well, I'm going to have to look at the film. You know, I'm just going to go by what I've said all along. He's been consistent. He's been a good communicator in the back end. He's made some plays on the ball. He's also, showed some leadership and been very consistent, and I think he did some good things tonight, obviously.
So Carr has got to play well. He's got to come out of the gate and beat Jared Goff. He has to. And then he has to go and play at a high level and get the Raiders off to, I think, a 3-1 start. People are asking me that a lot more now, just gaming friends, guys who are betting football. And other people are asking, what do you think the Raiders are going to do? I don't go on record with win totals and say the Raiders are going to go over-under. That doesn't help me here. But last year, I had them going to the Super Bowl. So believe me, I had to take the pain and take the heat on that one. I waited till they got to 12 wins to go the year after, and I fell on my face. This year, the only way the Raiders will be a playoff team is they have to start fast. The Rams at home, they're at Miami early on, at Denver, and obviously they have Cleveland at home. We just played the Jim Brown sound. Cleveland's going to be vastly improved, probably not good enough to win road games, or many of them, but the Raiders better put Cleveland down early in the season if they're going to be 2-2 or 3-1. One more on Gruden about Donald Penn. Donald Penn moves from left tackle to right tackle because Colt Miller, the first-round draft pick, is up to speed, healthy, and ready to play. Now, I don't know if he's going to be good all year. He's never played in the NFL. And those guys who come off the edge come off like great white sharks with a head start. They are unbelievably athletic and incredible. But now Gruden has another Pro Bowler that he can put on the right side.
Well, Donald Penn played pretty well. He had one snap today where he was power rushed, but I'm going to watch the tape before I make too many specific comments. It's a work in progress. He's been out a long time, and doing rehab on the side with the trainers is one thing, and coming out in these games and blocking premier rushers is another. So he's got a ways to go to get back to 100%, but we do appreciate his hard work.
if you're a big Raider fan and you follow football closely, that's a huge move. Moving someone from left tackle to right tackle who's coming off an injury isn't easy. The way the Raiders can pull it off is Donald Penn is a three-time Pro Bowler. He's not your average offensive lineman. He has a skill set. He's got to step off on the right side and play at a Pro Bowl-type level if they're going to break a kid in on the left side. I have confidence in the Raiders' offensive line. Their receivers are deep. They have three running backs, a fullback, I think a Pro Bowl quarterback. The question is Khalil Mack. When does Mack come back? The Raiders have him under contract. He's not trade bait. He's under contract at a cheap price, and they can franchise tag him in the future. And it's too early to even talk about that. I hope the Mack deal gets done. The Raiders need Mack to win big games right out of the gate, especially that Rams game. Hopefully something breaks in that story here this week. And finally, how about Sam Darnold and the Jets? Keeping a close eye on what rookie quarterbacks are actually going to start week one. Baker Mayfield was taken one overall, but they have Tyrod Taylor to go first. Sam Darnold played himself into the starting role in the number one media market with the Jets.
Building wins, building little stacks of wins, and you look up at the end of the day and you got a big stack. So I'm just trying to come out here every single day, whether it's practice or games, and just continue to be consistent. Manage the game, don't turn the ball over, and score in the red zone. That's really the biggest thing that I try to do as a quarterback.
And one other quarterback was upset today. Tom Brady hung up on the host of his radio show. Okay, we're not talking about him, a prank caller calling him from overseas and pranking him. No, the show that he goes on his flagship, he hung up on because he didn't like the questions about his trainer, Alex Guerrero, which, again, I don't know how far I don't think the guys went too far asking why a guy was on the plane or why he went on a trip. That's a fair question. Tom Brady wanted nothing to do with it, so much so that he hung up. Which in my household growing up, we had one of those phones on the wall back in the day. He had the long cord. If you're going to walk over and hang up on it, people knew Tom Brady, just in the middle of a phone call, drops the call because he's upset with that. And Manu Ginobili retires after 16 seasons today. I've had the pleasure of watching him play live many times, covering the Spurs and a few of their championships on Fox Sports Radio, going to those Ginobili ring games. What a player. What a player. Maybe one of the great. You would think of him at the end as a sixth man. He always was a starter that played in big minutes. But when you think of a role player, help me with this one, everybody. Role player, close your eyes unless you're driving. Ginobili's one of the guys. Who do you put in his category all time in that type of role of Ginobili? So you got Ginobili. Who would you put in a room, three or four guys, and say, Ginobili's just like blank? It's hard to do. He was that good because he won all those rings. He was a champion at the highest level. He was internationally known, and he was so gifted as a shooter and a passer and a grit player. Wow, Ginobili was great. And that's a big retirement. He stuck around just enough to see Kawhi Leonard, the championships, Greg Popovich, Manu Ginobili, one player. And lastly, the shooting in Jacksonville, the gamers that passed away playing Madden, a heavy heart. I watched that all weekend. We live in a gaming community where they have stadiums now being built on the strip for gaming. We had one October in this town. You can all understand what's going on in Jacksonville. You can tie it into sports, obviously, esports. But I wanted to make sure we got that in the monologue. Prayers to all the lives that were lost at that event over the weekend in Jacksonville. Kevin Ioli joining us coming up. He'll get into what's happening with boxing and the calendar, which picks up steam right here. And John McCain, who just passed away, the senator from Arizona. Huge boxing footprint on the sport, especially the last 30-plus years. We'll talk to Kevin about that. Brought to you by the Henderson Hyundai Superstore. Boulder Highway in Henderson. A deal is waiting for you there.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have the time of 1 minute 5 seconds in round number 10. Our referee stops the contest. He is the winner by way of technical knockout and still undefeated, Floyd Money
boxing calendar picks up. Obviously, the MMA calendar. Kevin Ioli, the great insider, the great columnist, joins us on Fox Sports Radio. Nice work on the passing of John McCain and tying it into the sport that he loved. Kevin, a lot of journalists thought this could come in the coming weeks, let alone the coming days here. Talk about getting your head wrapped around this and knowing the history of McCain and this great sport.
Well, Senator McCain really did so much for the fight world, both boxing and MMA. You know, he is disliked by some MMA fans who don't understand really what he had done in the sport. When he called it human cockfighting in 1997 and made an effort to get it taken off of television, it wasn't because he hated the sport. He hated that there were no rules protecting the athletes. And he went out there and... when there was regulation, he supported it. He went to fights. You know, he loved boxing. That was a passion of his. He loved boxers. He loved talking to them. But you saw the reaction of so many fighters, JT. Even John Bones Jones, the former UFC light heavyweight champion, posted a photo of himself with Senator McCain. It just showed the passion that he had for the fight game, and he really was a big part of it.
The Muhammad Ali Boxing Reform Act to protect boxers that they thought were exploited and powerless. What more do you need to hear? Because you're talking about a sport that you cover so gracefully, and you're always on the road, and you see sometimes how rough and tough it can be behind the scenes. Can you go back to the Naval Academy and how tough he was and the boxing background just to get to the next level in your career as a Navy man? He just had a passion and love to walk into an arena, be seen on television, and talk to boxers who were around him.
Yeah, he was. I mean, I went. I was covering the De La Hoya Bernardo Hopkins fight in 2004, and it was kind of an amazing scene when you look back on it now. But what happened then? That was at the MGM Grand Garden here in Las Vegas, and De La Hoya was just shaken out on the day before the fight, and you know had his hands wrapped. His cut man, the late Joe Chavez, cut the wraps off, and he inadvertently kind of poked Oscar in the hand. So there was rumor, I had broken the story that he had gotten cut. There was rumor that was he going to be able to fight. So I went over to ringside a little before the pay-per-view started, and there's Bob Arum, Senator Harry Reid, Governor Bill Richardson of New Mexico, later became the U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, and Senator John McCain. And I had to interview Arum about Oscar. And as I stood there, it was incredible the power that was standing there in that one spot. But Senator McCain just talked to me about the fight. You know, who do you like in the fight? What do you think Oscar has to do to survive B-Hop? And it was incredible when you hear, because here I am just a reporter trying to hustle and get a story, and he's there, you know, thinking about the fight and who's going to win. It just says so much about him and what kind of fight fan he was.
Kevin Ioli's our guest from Yahoo, the great columnist, boxing and MMA. And really interesting, too, if you look at the last 30 years as he was a senator and legislator, and what happened in the real world outside of sports, he had such a passion for the Diamondbacks, obviously for big sporting events, the Olympic Games. I think John McCain understood it. Today I've been watching, and yesterday, Kevin, like you, the 5+ years in solitary confinement when he was a prisoner of war, the arc of his life and how huge it was to know that he had a genuine love affair with boxing, a sport that we both cover.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, and when you look and you hear fighters, they use the word all the time, he's a warrior. There's no greater epitome of the word warrior than John McCain was. I mean, he was the living, breathing embodiment of that word. He could have been released several years earlier had he made controversial comments about the United States, but he loved his country, he was going to do the right thing, and he refused to make those comments, and he did not want to be released before people who were ranked lower than him. He felt like, you know, he deserved to be there with them, and the man lived an incredible life, and we were all, whether you're Republican, whether you're Democrat, we were all better for his presence.
Because of the draw finish and the fact that this fight's been delayed because of Canelo, and his issues as he tested positive. What concerns you this close to Canelo Triple G, too, that this promotion isn't off to a good start, or they need to pick up the steam quickly and remind everybody how big of a fight this is?
Well, I think the problem they have is neither fighter at this point really wants to get out there and do a lot. You know, Triple G had some really sharp words for Canelo yesterday, but he's not making himself that much available. You know, he wants to focus on the fight, and Canelo is really unhappy with the media, and he's keeping a low profile. So when you look at those two things, you know, I think it's just going to be up to the promoters to find ways. You know, they're going to have to get the trainers out there. They're going to have to get other people other than the fighters to be out there, because as we hit the home stretch, you know, this is a fantastic fight. But they kind of had the same thing happen to them that happened in reverse last time. You know, you had the Floyd Mayweather-Conor McGregor fight 3 weeks before their fight last year. Now you have Conor McGregor and Khabib that's a couple of weeks after them this year. So there's a big fight, you know, on the horizon, and do people say, I want to save my money for it? They have to get their butts out, and they have to have somebody talking on their behalf because this is kind of down to the top.
Can you believe that,
road.
Kevin, from what you just said, too, the four-city tour for Mayweather-McGregor and how vile it got and how raw? I mean, it turned some people off. They went so aggressive, and you just mentioned two fighters now coming up here in mid-September that don't even want to talk. I mean, you don't have to be as extreme as Floyd and McGregor. That was way over the top, but these guys need to promote their fight in their primes, Triple G coming out of his, because this could be their last big super fight to build on.
You know, one of the things, and I like Gennady personally. Canelo, I don't have the same relationship with. You know, we are always, you know, he sees me, he gives me an embrace. I've liked him, but because of the language barrier, I don't know him personally as well as I do Gennady. And the thing is, you know, Gennady is one of the guys, and there's a lot of them, so I'm not going to just criticize him, who, when he's not making the big purses, when he's not getting the fights, you know, he complains about it, and he'll talk to the media. But when he gets the big fight, he doesn't understand that you have to make yourself more available. The things that made fighters like Ronda Rousey and Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor the huge pay-per-view selling superstars that they are is not just their great talent, which of course was part of it, but their willingness to work harder than anyone promoting those shows. And that's what Gennady and Canelo are not doing on this fight. I still think it's going to sell a million pay-per-views.
Absolutely.
But I just hate to see them leave some money on the table that they didn't have to do.
Always agree with you the majority of the time. Appreciate your insight. Thanks a lot, Kevin, for doing this.
See you, brother.
You got it. Kevin Ioli, fantastic work on this John McCain column. And he put it out quickly. A lot of people were talking about that the last couple of days, that ABC, CNN, they already had these obituaries in place for John McCain. It ran flawlessly, 60 minutes quickly. They're in reruns. They put out an old interview, which was fantastic, and tagged it at the end. John McCain had a big impact on boxing, and especially for reform, and he meant it, because of his background and how important the sport was to him. Kevin Ioli, we just tweeted out the column. Take a look at it. Coming up, Joe Lisi off his big weekend in Vegas. Joe's back east. He was in Vegas for a conference. Everybody knew in town he was the guy who had Hawaii, and he nailed it big. Wait till you hear this story. Also, Lee Sterling tells us he's coming on at 4:45 with the winner, UNLV, USC. From a point spread perspective, he's got it. He's confident. He wants to give it to you in Vegas coming up in 15 minutes.
And we're going to tell you now on third down is an enhancement we have. We think you're going to like this. The green zone, we're going to call it. So we are going to paint, in effect, the area that the team has to go to get to the yellow line, the first down line. And there it is. So you can follow the progress. We know the yellow line is great. It's been around for a lot of years. But this will show you exactly how far he has to go at any point in the play.
So once again, the fans will know more than the players on the field.
That was weird last night, and I didn't catch it the first time and wasn't paying that close of attention until I saw it all today on the new Green Zone on NBC. So when you know you got to get to the flag, you got to get to the marker, that whole area is going to be shaded in. on Sunday Night Football. Okay. Well, all right. If you need that to watch, Joe Lisi, go for the two. What a weekend he had in Vegas. I missed him as I was up in Oakland, but he took the town over. Let's get right into Hawaii on the money line. Sportsbook directors were tweeting about it. Fans and listeners were. How'd you have this game? Walk us through the story in Vegas.
Yeah, I mean, thanks, JT. It was a great spot for Nick Rolovich in Hawaii on the road in Colorado State. I mean, they were dominated in recent years and lost this ball game 51-21 last year at home and rebounded in a big way with a huge performance by quarterback Cole McDonald. I just thought they were ripe. I wasn't sold on Colorado State after the losses of Nick Stevens, Dalen Dawkins, and Michael Gallup. And defensively, I thought Hawaii could challenge that Colorado State secondary. And they didn't disappoint, but they didn't make it easy either after Colorado State inched to within six with about 2 minutes left. But I was happy to get the plus 475 money line winner in Vegas this weekend.
And is that something, Joe, because I remember you mentioning Colorado State with me a couple of weeks ago, is that something you work on in the entire offseason? You're looking for an early matchup because you think there's a big advantage from information you had in the offseason? It could be recruiting coming in, coach leaving, whatever it is that you want to pounce on that first week.
Yeah, I mean, it goes back to breaking down the strengths and weaknesses of each team. And when you broke down Colorado State last year, JT, I mean, they won seven games last year against six FBS opponents who had a combined overall record of 18-56 overall, or a 243 winning percentage. Now, granted, they won those six games by 19.2 points per game, but it was at less competition. And I think when you look at Colorado State defensively over the last few years now under Mike Bobo, they've been very inconsistent in terms of run support. And Cole McDonald stretched that defense vertically, and when they had to run the football, they made plays. And I really felt that Hawaii was ripe for the upset. Again, when you have a young team, you're going to get their best effort, especially after 4 months of preparation, and that's what you got out of Hawaii this past weekend.
Joe Lisi, go for the two. Give us something to look at in Michigan, Notre Dame. Surprise, and I know home at homes, and those are big paydays and massive schools. You remember last year, Joe, exactly when Georgia, remember how many tickets they got at Notre Dame, and they took over part of the stadium? Is there any chance that could happen again with Michigan coming in, or was Notre Dame so embarrassed by that ticket fiasco and their fans selling out to the opposing fans coming in? Should this be more of a home game for Notre Dame against Michigan than last year against Georgia?
Well, it should be. I mean, this is a huge rivalry dating back to the days of Elvis Gerback and Desmond Howard and even before that. So when Bo Schembechler was there back in the day in Ann Arbor. But there's a lot of pressure on Jim Harbaugh on Michigan in this battle. I mean, the matchup that you want to see play out is you're looking at a Notre Dame offense that averaged 269 rushing yards per game last year and had a very inconsistent quarterback in Jared Wimbush, that Brandon Wimbush, that only completed 48% of his passes. You lose Quentin Nelson, you lose Mike McGlinchey, you lose the starting running back Adams and St. Brown at the wide receiver position. That's going to put a lot of pressure should Michigan jump up early in that ballgame. And when you look at Michigan's defense overall, JT, one of the best statistical defenses against the pass last year. They held opposing offenses to 150 passing yards per game. They recorded 42 total sacks, and more importantly, held opposing offenses to 26% on third down conversions. And when you look at the addition of former Ole Miss quarterback Shea Patterson, he's going to be able to stretch that Notre Dame defense vertically. That'll open up running lanes later in the ballgame, and I think that's the matchup that you want to see play out. If Michigan jumps up early, can Brandon Wimbush and the Notre Dame offense match them score for score? I think it's going to be an uphill battle for Brian Kelly and the crew, and I think Michigan wins a double-digit victory on the road in South Bend this coming weekend.
Hey, Joe, SC UNLV, and what jumps out at me is I saw JT Daniels play more recently than USC fans. I watched him beat Bishop Gorman at Modern Day last year. I was there with my family. He was playing high school football. Now he's the starter behind Sam Darnold going to the Jets. I'm looking at UNLV catching 27 now, 26. It opened at 25.5. Imani Rodgers and his ability to play in the climate of Division I to a kid playing his first game out of high school. How do you see this move?
Yeah, I mean, I don't like that UNLV's defensive end now is hurt, because when you look at them defensively, they allow 239 rushing yards per game. But I agree with you. Lexington Thomas and Armani Rogers are great talents on the offensive side of the ball, but so is Stephen Carr for USC. He's 100-1 shot to win the Heisman. I look for USC to run the football against that UNL defense, their front seven. Now, prior to the injury, I liked UNLV early on with the points because USC does have Stanford on deck in week number two, but I think with that loss of their defensive end, and when you look at four or five offensive line starters coming back for USC, I think Stephen Carr has a huge day. Like I said, I liked UNLV early on, but I would lay the points with USC in this ballgame.
Wow, and lastly, it would be devastating for Miami to lose to LSU. LSU barely a top 25 team. What Miami did last year, neutral site at Cowboys Stadium here. Big spot for Miami in their overall run to the playoff again, and what expectations are. They're not overlooking LSU, right?
No, they're not, but here's the one thing I look at from a physicality perspective. The one thing that LSU recruits is top five talent on the offense and defensive lines. You might not know their names now, but during the middle of the season, you'll know who they are. One thing about LSU that I can tell you is that they rushed for over 200 yards, JT, in six of their ball games last year. They were 6-0 in those games and won those six games by 17.6 points per game, and they stuffed five opponents, held them under 100 yards rushing in five games. They were 5-0 and won those five games by 19.5 points per game. When you look at Miami's record last year on the road or on a neutral field site against teams like North Carolina, Florida State, Pittsburgh, they were 3-1 against those opponents and only won those three games by 11.2 points per game. This is a different animal in LSU, and Miami's offense only converted 29% with Malik Rozier last year. Joe Burrow comes over from Ohio State. I think that's the difference as well. I think the physicality of LSU is the difference, and I think they get a 10-13-point win over Mark Richt and the crew on Saturday night.
You're coming off a monster pick with all your peers in the industry around you with Hawaii on the money line. Tell everyone what's going up now at GoForTheTwo.com.
Yeah, I'm putting together a video now with my week one picks, best bets for the weekend. They'll be up probably in the next couple of hours. So take a look. Go to GoForTheTwo.com. You can still pick up my preview on Amazon at GoForTheTwo.com, Power 5 College Football Preview. It's available in paperback and ebook.
Thank you, my friend. We'll talk to you next week.
Anytime, JT. Love the show.
All right. Joe Lisi was just in town at GoForTheTwo, and with all the pros who are in town for the Super Contest, everything that was going on over at the Westgate, the events that he was at, to have Hawaii on the money line and hit it with all his buddies around him and all the people in the industry, a bunch of guys texted me that night. Great that Joe had such a killer first week with that game, and that was a game he went out there and had. And when everybody was quiet on it, he went big on the money line. Lee Sterling, here he comes, Paramount Sports, free picks. He's another guy I'll put on the radio. If you look at his website, we'd greatly appreciate it. But he's only coming on because I told him, you got to give me winners. He's given us UNLV and USC next. I have no idea what direction he's going in. Joe just said lay the points with SC. What does Lee Sterling think next?
The margin is so much smaller than it was a couple years ago as far as us having an opportunity to have, you know, solid seasons and to play really good football. So we got to problem solve it. We got to look at a lot of different variables, things that we need to do in order to move this program forward. And that's exactly what we're going to do. And we're going to have to figure out a way to be more solid and more consistent and get more wins.
Tony Sanchez, turn this up. Today's Alex Lifeson's 65th birthday. Bobby, when I've been to 54 Rush shows, I know Alex Lifeson's birthday. One of the days I can remember. Welcome back. JT The Brick Show, PT's, your home for fantasy football. The kit is ready, the drink and food specials. Any of the many PT's in the Valley is your spot. Put it together quick. Get outside your home and put together a great fantasy football party. Lee Sterling, Paramount Sports, been in this business as long as anybody I know with a great reputation. One of the more reputable friends that I put on the radio because I know where he is, he knows where to find us, and he gives us his best shot. Heading into every weekend. And Lee, good to talk to you again. And UNLV opening up at SC. SC's under construction. They're putting in a high school quarterback who I saw beat Bishop Gorman last year from Modern Day. And I know that UNLV has an athletic quarterback who can make plays outside the pocket. Let's begin. UNLV at SC coming up.
I don't think that UNLV can win this game, but I think that they can play with USC. The reason is, look at USC's defense. Last year, they gave up 150 or more rushing yards on seven occasions, and when they did, they were 2-5 against the spread. That's UNLV's bread and butter, JT. They average 5.5 yards per carry. You won't find 10 schools in the country that average that running the football. They return their quarterback, Armani Rogers. They return a 1,300-yard rusher with 17 TDs, Lexington Thomas, three of the top four receivers from last year. This is year three, and I expect big things in year three from head coach Tony Sanchez. They got to look out. Let's say they play them close here, and then next week they can't get upset here. But I think they're going to keep it tight here. I think USC wins 38-24, but UNLV, they cover easy.
That's all we want. That's what we want to hear. Obviously, they're praying for a win and an upset, but to cover, that's what we wanted to hear from you. Lee Sterling is our guest, Paramount Sports. Notre Dame-Michigan just seems so huge right out of the gate. Are we getting cheated on this? Wouldn't it be great if we had this closer to Thanksgiving or as the weather's turning? This is a monster game with two high-profile coaches who seem to be struggling amongst each other, these two coaches, to get the best players in America and keep them away from each other, or Penn State or Urban Meyer in Columbus, whatever it is. This is a huge game. Winner move forward, loser go home. Michigan at Notre Dame.
Well, I'd like to see the game played like in week three.
Yeah.
This kind of reminds me of a game here, maybe a little bit, when Auburn a couple years ago, when Jarrett Stidham, his first game, he had to face Clemson, and he didn't do too well. They lost 19-13, but Shea Patterson is a different kind of guy. He can, not a great scrambler, but he can buy time. So he's not going to gain 600-700 yards rushing, but he can find the receiver when he has to. Last year, Michigan, they knew deep down. If you talk to people inside the program, they would tell you they had the fourth least experienced team out of 130 teams. They weren't going anywhere with that team. They weren't going anywhere with that quarterback. As long as they keep Shea Patterson upright, this is going to be a really good team. How good was their defense last year? They can just shut down people. They allow just 121 rushing yards per game, just 3.5 yards per carry, and that's how Notre Dame likes to travel. Notre Dame is a run-first team. If you believe in Brandon Wimbush, you believe in the Tooth Fairy, he is not going to take you to the promised land. And then if you have to throw the football, this is the era of throwing the football, and Michigan allowed just 11 touchdown passes last year in a minuscule 150 yards per game passing here. The Irish defense, how about this? You think of them as tough, not so great. They allowed 4 yards per carry and had just 24 sacks. Wrong team's favored here. I think Michigan now about a pick 'em minus one. I think they're going to win this game here 27-20.
I love when he says wrong team favorite. That's when you know. You can hear the inflection from Lee Sterling. Tell us how to get the game of the week. You know, we've been hearing about San Diego State here in Vegas for quite some time.
Yeah.
Even the pro players that go through that program. Big boy game against Stanford and a great coaching staff that has players who can play on the edge. How do we get that game, Lee?
Well, Stanford was sitting at, I think, like 5-0 last year. Stanford, they are being talked about as the team that might win the Pac-12. So San Diego State and Stanford right out of the gate. Just call 800-400-9741 or go to the website, ParamountSports.com.
Thrilled to have you back, bud. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, JT.
There's Lee Sterling, who gave you Michigan outright at Notre Dame and said UNLV will cover. Now, are we going to run him out of Dodge if UNLV doesn't cover? No, he'll come back every week, but he wants to give you that game. Believes, and I believe a lot of what he said. I'm a big believer when you debut a high school quarterback in a Coliseum, one of the biggest stadiums in the world, and say, go play, even though he's a modern-day kid, and don't get me going on modern-day Gorman this past week. Biting my tongue. Tough loss, but you got Amari going up against a kid who hasn't played a college game yet. You got to hope in the mano-a-mano battle of quarterbacks that Rodgers can move the chains with his legs. The reason you cover spreads and you're inferior or you're behind a team is because you pick up first downs running. You're not going to complete bombs every play. You're not going to have this unbelievable route runner and beat a team much favored. But if your quarterback can tuck it and run and dive for first downs and keep the other team on the sideline, that's what has to happen in this game for UNLV, hopefully to cover this and get off to a good start momentum-wise. The best start's a win at SC. That's tough. SC's a good team, really good this year, ranked nationally. But what we can see with UNLV is an effort and a scheme based on a quarterback who can make plays outside the pocket that makes it competitive, to say the least. Looney joins us at the top of the hour. We got a big show. We're back. Looney's excited. I'm excited. The President of the United States tweeted about our radio show today. Our conversation with Jim Brown. He found time to tweet about it. Looney's going to want to talk about that and all of our great guests. Oh, yes, Bobby, he will. I don't know what he's going to say about it because the show hasn't started yet. But believe me, he'll have something to say. And more on the preseason as the dress rehearsals are over, but I didn't see a lot of effort in week three of the preseason. I'm going to hammer away at that. And the Yankees are picking up games on the Red Sox. 32 games left, and the Yanks are 5 out in the loss column and play the Red Sox 6 more times. I like that type of party.